This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. There's an unfolding situation related to some big development and investment projects in the Northeast Kingdom, and that's what we're going to tackle first today on the program. It was announced earlier this month that Vermont state regulators were going to freeze the escrow account for the Q Burke Hotel. They said there were millions of dollars that had been taken out of the account by developers Bill Stenger and Ariel Quiros that hadn't been fully documented. The developers deny that claim. But now there are reports of federal agents locking the doors of the completed but still unopened hotel and resort and conducting what Governor Shumlin's office is calling a coordinated investigation. As we air live in the noon hour, a press conference is expected within the hour to update the media on what exactly is happening. But joining us now to explain what is already known is reporter Hillary Niles. Hi, Hillary.
Hi, Jane.
So what's the latest that's known at this hour about this unfolding, quote-unquote, situation at Q Burke and, we should say, at J Peak?
Right. So what we're hearing is that WCAX broke the story that yesterday federal investigators locked the doors, changed the locks on the doors at Q Burke, effectively locking out even senior management from getting into the hotel. We expect to hear more about the specifics of the investigation at that press conference later today. But really, this is just the latest. This is not coming out of nowhere. This is the latest development in a pretty long building string of complications at the development up in Burke. Just a couple weeks ago, over about 180 employees were laid off, unfortunately. That followed the hotel, as you said, had originally been planned to open in December. The hotel is completed, but the contractor was holding. He was having a hard time getting money that he was owed, getting his invoices paid. So he was holding the permits for the hotel so that they were not able to open. You know, people had reservations. People had weddings planned there this summer. Those are gone. And then it dates back even further to the state taking over the escrow account, where the developers were supposed to be, you know, holding their investment money in escrow. The state said, we're going to take that over. And this latest is just the latest development in a long string.
Well, and actually, we just got word, again, WCAX looking at this and reporting that there's word that the Federal Securities and Exchange Commission has appointed an outside company right now to run both Q Burke and J Peak.
Right, exactly. Because it was uncovered last summer that the SEC had been investigating all of the EB-5 funded projects by the same company and the same sort of group of developers and owners that run J Peak. They have J Peak Ski Resort up in Jay. They've had taken ownership at Burke Mountain, renamed it Q Burke, a few years ago. We're planning build outs and executed build outs at Burke. And they also have a planned biotech campus up in Newport. All of those projects came under the same umbrella, I believe, of the SEC investigation.
And why are the feds investigating these resorts? And we can get into what the EB-5 visa program is in a moment, but what's the baseline for investigation?
It stems originally really from investor complaints. So one of the first, actually the first EB-5 funded project, immigrant investor funded project up at J Peak, was way back in 2009, the Tram House Lodge. And investors a couple years ago came to the state complaining that they were not being paid back the way they had anticipated and understood that they would be. So it really stemmed from investor complaints, I think, to the state, to the press, who then, you know, publicized some of these controversies and concerns. And also, I know from my own reporting that there have been complaints directly to the SEC as well.
So investors were saying, we either don't know where our money has gone or we're not getting paid back for the investment we made in this project. And we're concerned that the money isn't coming as it was designed to be coming.
Exactly. So in the case of the Tram House Lodge, that was pretty interesting because first the investors were complaining that they were not getting paid back on the schedule that they anticipated. The thing to know, without getting too much into the weeds, the thing to know about the EB-5 investment funds is that the federal program through which all of this money gets channeled, it actually prohibits the businesses from making any guarantee that the money will be paid back. Their securities, they're considered quote unquote at risk, and the business is literally legally not allowed to say "I promise." Not that that's a legal term, but you get the idea,
right?
Okay, so. What happened with the Tram House investors is they were saying, we're not getting the money back on the schedule that we thought we were going to. And then what Jay Peake did is unilaterally converted all of those equity shares. If I recall, I think it was around 35, but I'm not sure. Anyway, Jay Peake unilaterally converted all of those equity shares to basically an IOU. An unsecured IOU. And Ariel Quiros, who's the owner of Jay Peake, his rationale in defense of that move was, well, I couldn't promise before. I wasn't allowed to. And now I'm promising you, like, look, this is a more secure investment for you.
Basically, however, because I'm giving you my word.
Because I'm giving you my word. However, whether or not it was actually legally secured was, you know, pretty ambiguous. And not to mention, that move was made without consulting the investors first. It was actually months after that they even found out that it had been done. So that definitely, even if there had been a good argument that could have convinced them, the fact that they didn't find out about it until months later, it just was not ever going to probably sit well.
You're listening to Vermont Edition. I'm talking with Hillary Niles, independent investigative reporter, and we're looking at the situation in the Northeast Kingdom that's still unfolding as we're live here in the noon hour about what's happening at Kew Burke Mountain Resort with federal and state investigators coming in and investigating finances, investigating the operations of Kew Burke and Jay Peake. And if you're up in the area, if you have some insight into what's been happening, we'd love to hear from you if this is something that you're involved in or something that you know a little bit about and have questions or are watching. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. You can also post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Hillary, these investors that we're talking about and the money, much of it is tied up in a foreign investor program that comes along with federal residency visas. It's known as the EB-5 program. And can you explain how it works?
Sure. So this is a federal program. I should say a lot of countries have this. It's not unique to the United States. Basically, a business can solicit a foreign investment of either $1 million or $500,000 in, you know, building out an American business.
And that million versus 500,000 depends on the area that you're investing in, whether
exactly.
It's sort of underserved or not. It's the lower amount is for places like the Northeast Kingdom that are rural and sort of underserved.
Exactly. Yeah. And in exchange for that investment, as long as it can be sort of traced or somehow attributed to the creation of 10 jobs, then the investor plus the investor's immediate family all get basically through the course of a couple years and a bunch of paperwork, they all get green cards. The one thing I want to make clear about that job creation requirement, because I hear this getting confused a lot, is it does not have to be 10 direct jobs in Vermont. It doesn't have to be 10 people added to that business's payroll. So like if a hotel orders, you know, 3,000 feather pillows and a feather pillow plant in Oklahoma has to hire new work to help fill the order,
that counts
towards the job creation requirement. At any rate, the program has been controversial for years, not just because some people object to what they feel like is the United States selling green cards, but also because there have been some really high-profile controversies in other EB-5 projects around the country. So it's been a topic.
And when you talk about selling, that there's this assertion or this feeling that the U.S. is selling these visas, it's partly because of what you mentioned before, that this money is basically unsecured, that these investors who are putting in $500,000 or $1 million, depending on where they are not guaranteed to get their money back. They're not guaranteed a payback. So in some ways, it could be seen as I'm just paying $500,000 or $1 million in order to get my family residency in the United States, and that's a price I'm willing to pay whether I get that money back or not.
Certainly, and some of the investors have the kind of resources that actually is, a mathematical equation that makes sense for them. Other investors really do scrap and save, maybe cash in all of their chips in order to make the investment, and so they really are counting on getting that money back. But in any case, you still have to have $500,000 worth to scrap and save. And so it's really a program that is only available to people with a certain amount of net worth.
And these investors, these EB-5 investors, as they're known, have been heavily involved in the Q Brook Mountain Resort, which, as we said, is built but still hasn't been opened yet. But they're also involved in Jay Peak, in ANC Bio, as you mentioned. So it's quite a few developments in the Northeast Kingdom that are all tied to this.
Absolutely. And if anybody has seen over the last several years the way that Jay Peak has really just exploded with development, pretty much all of that has been immigrant investor funded. It's all been, it's almost all been funded through the EB-5 program. The water park, the condos, the new hotels, the Tram House Lodge, it's all been EB-5 funded.
We're getting word just now from the Securities and Exchange Commission. Direct quote here from a press release that was just sent out. The Securities and Exchange Commission today announced fraud charges and an asset freeze against a Vermont-based ski resort and related businesses, allegedly misusing millions of dollars raised through investments solicited under the EB-5 Immigrant Investor Program. So the news here is fraud charges. We knew there was an investigation happening. We knew this was going on, but there was no actual direct report that there were fraud charges against these businesses. Additionally, the SEC alleges that Ariel Quiros of Miami, William Stenger, Bill Stenger as he's known, of Newport, Vermont, and their companies made false statements and omitted key information while raising more than $350 million from investors to construct ski resort facilities and a biomedical research facility in Vermont. Investors were told that they were investing in one of several projects connected to Jay Peak, Inc., a ski resort operated by Quiros and Stenger, and their money would only be used to finance that specific project. Again, that's a direct quote from the SEC. Instead, in Ponzi-like fashion, money from investors in later projects was misappropriated to fund deficits in earlier projects. More than $200 million was allegedly used for other than stated purposes, including $50 million spent on Quiros' personal expenses and in other ways never disclosed to investors. Again, this coming out just now from the SEC. Hillary Niles, what do you think in reaction to that?
I think it's a relief to hear the P word from the SEC.
P being Ponzi?
Exactly, because that's really what has been the subtext. And people who have been following this closely, started reporting on this for VT Digger when I worked there a couple years ago and have been following it since. At a bit more of a distance, but still, that's really been the subtext. That's been a lot of the assumption, and that's a really strong charge to make. So that's not something that a lot of people are willing to say out loud. But in a way, that's what I think. I think it's almost a relief to hear that and to finally have it, come out in the open, because it's really stressful for these communities. I mean, obviously, it's going to be very challenging going forward, no matter what happens as a result of these charges, whether they're substantiated, whether there's a conviction. But at least it represents, a turning point in the investigation.
What about Ariel Quiros and Bill Stenger? I mean, they are known, certainly very well-known quantities in the state. And, you're saying that there was some talk here about, is this a Ponzi scheme? Is this really happening? But that couldn't be proven and certainly couldn't be reported. But what you hear in the media a lot, and this sort of sense that you get of what how Bill Stenger represents himself, is almost as a hero for the Northeast Kingdom, which is a very poor part of the state in comparison to places like Chittenden County, hasn't had a lot of development. You have this developer coming in here who's saying, we can help boost revenues in this part of the state, create jobs, really create a good thing for this community. You know, what about the sort of, at least the allegations here that are coming at some people who are very well known?
Well, I think that sort of hero status and the benefits of these developments, if everything, I don't want to speak too much in the past tense, right? But if everything had worked out, or if everything does work out, then that would come to fruition, and it would be really great for Jay. I mean, there have been like official, econometric reports that directly attribute a drop in the unemployment rate up in the Northeast Kingdom to developments at Jay Peak. Unfortunately, it's sounding like the revenue behind those projects was maybe not as sustainable right? And so now what is it going to do to the unemployment rate? I think also about the community at Burke, the reporting that I did up there. You know, that ski mountain has a long history. It has a long history of really dedicated community support and of a string of ownerships, big promises, and even bigger disappointments. It's just sad to see another one seem to be unfolding.
Let's go to Victor, who's calling in from Concord. Hi, Victor. Go ahead.
Hi. The state of Vermont needs to immediately release the escrow funds, which they have, and help the guys at the bottom of the food chain who have been screwed for months and not paid. I mean, this is the immediate issue right now, is that there's a number of subcontractors who were involved in the construction. And I have nothing to do with it. I'm not one of the subcontractors. I have no personal relationship with any of them. But from what I understand, because of the financial irregularities that our hero Bill changing the terms of the deal with the foreign investors from an ownership deal to a strict investment, the state originally froze up the escrow funds because of the financial irregularity. So the end result is that now for all these months, little contract guys who do electrical, plumbing, they had to pay their men, they have to pay for their supplies, and they didn't get paid. So their credit lines are wiped out. It's putting stress on the local banks. And all the state of Vermont has to do is check to make sure that their invoices are legitimate, and then release the money to help the people at the bottom of the food chain. Then worry about the feds throwing Bill in jail afterwards.
Victor, thanks for your comment. Appreciate that. Hillary Niles, you wanted to react to that.
Yeah, Victor, my understanding is that the state definitely took over the escrow account for the funds for Q Burke. And I have read some of the same reports and heard some of the same conversation from Bill Stenger and from Jerry Davis and other subcontractors about the state not releasing the funds. What Susan Donegan, who is the commissioner of the Department of Financial Regulation, that is the state agency that oversight for the EB-5 program got shifted to a year or so ago. What Susan Donegan says is, we cannot release funds that are not there. Some of the invoices that are being charged to this account exceed the amount of money in the account. And frankly, if you just follow the timeline, this should not come as a great big surprise, because I was at the groundbreaking for Q Burke. It was a very surreal experience, because I knew how few. It was like we had reported at VT Digger. It was known how few investors they had at that time when they initiated the groundbreaking for the hotel. They took a bit of a gamble that more investors would need to see some progress. It would help their fundraising, basically, in order to be able to show the progress to investors. But clearly, just, with the continual questions and allegations being raised, it would appear that the fundraising has not that EB-5 fundraising has not met the needs. But also, it sounds from the SEC press release that, Jane, that you just read, that there has been some question about whether those funds that did get raised are already gone because they went to plug holes in other projects and in other operations.
Yes, and that SEC press release also said perhaps for personal costs for Ariel Quiros. We're going to stay with this topic as it's just all unfolding now, as we're just getting this report from the SEC about what charges are developing for Bill Stanger, for Ariel Quiros, and the companies that they run in the Northeast Kingdom. If you have a question about this or maybe something personal to share, maybe this is something you're experiencing in the Northeast Kingdom, we'd love to hear from you. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. We're going to save our discussion about marijuana legalization or not legalization for another day to continue this conversation about what's happening with EB-5 investments, with a federal investigation, with the state's role in this situation with EB-5 investors up in the Northeast Kingdom. You're listening to Vermont Edition. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm, and I'm talking today with Hillary Niles, an independent investigative reporter who's been covering the situation in the Northeast Kingdom with EB-5 investment and with these big resorts coming in and big investors coming in. And we're just learning more today about an unfolding situation in the Northeast Kingdom. The state's been involved. The federal government has been involved. And the Securities and Exchange Commission freezing the assets of the ski resorts, JP, and Q Burke Mountain, and charging that Ariel Quiros and Bill Stanger of Newport and their companies made false statements and omitted key information while raising more than $350 million from investors. The SEC saying here, instead, in Ponzi-like fashion, money from investors in later projects was misappropriated to fund deficits in earlier projects. More than $200 million was allegedly used for other than stated purposes, including $50 million spent on Quiros' personal expenses and in other ways never disclosed to investors. If you'd like to share your thoughts, our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or you can post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Got a note from Michael who says, as a native from the Northeast Kingdom watching this from abroad, someone in the press needs to ask the governor and his administration about their role in this. It's not hard to find multiple pictures of him and his administration posing with Quiros on these projects. And as VT Digger has revealed, the state had no idea how to regulate these operations until it was too late. What about that, Hillary? What about the state's role in all of this?
So the EB-5 program that Vermont set up was unique in the truest sense of the word. It was the only state-run EB-5 shop, basically. So any EB-5 program, any EB-5-funded project in Vermont had to go through this state EB-5 office, which in technical terms in EB-5 land is called a regional center. There are hundreds of regional centers around the country, and virtually all, almost all of them are private, for-profit, commercial shops. There is now one other state-operated EB-5 regional center, but for years, Vermont's was the only one. The fact that the state was involved, the fact that multiple governors, it certainly predates Governor Shumlin's involvement. You know, Senator Leahy, Congressman Welch. I think there's even a picture of Bernie Sanders with some EB-5 investors. You know, the fact that it had such broad support from public officials and that it was operated through a state agency really was designed and had the effect of giving investors an added level of security, because as I said, these investments were at risk, so they knew they couldn't be guaranteed, but that did certainly provide some security for the investors.
Yeah, we can remember just a couple years ago now talking on this program with Governor Shumlin, who was set to go on a trip to China to drum up support. You know, he said he, at the time, walking a fine line, not drumming up support for this particular project, but as he said, support for this federal program, the EB-5 investor program. program, but it was a trip paid for not by taxpayers but by these developers.
And it is a really fine line. And the other fine line that's involved is the way that the regional center was structured to begin with. It was housed within the Agency of Commerce and Community Development. It was a very tiny staff. It was only part of what those two staff members did. But the thing is, they had two jobs that were in direct conflict. They were both cheerleader and overseer. So ultimately, the state, but as the caller mentioned, or the listener mentioned, probably a little too late, the state did peel off the oversight and regulatory responsibilities from Commerce and put them into Department of Financial Regulation.
Let's go to John, who's calling in from Richford. Hi, John. Go right ahead.
Hi. I worked for a contractor for about 5 years, and the entirety of my time was up on Jay Peak on these hotels. And at the end of, I want to say it was 2013, he was into my boss's line of credit for everything he had. It was a couple $100,000. And, you know, for about 6 months, he tried to go to different vice presidents and different higher-ups of higher management up at Jay Peak, and everybody just said, you got to keep waiting, you got to keep waiting. And finally, he wrote a letter to Bill Stanger, and, you know, he didn't want to because he knew it could jeopardize his contracts, but he had no choice. So in the end, you know, he did get the money, but it was 6 months after the completion of the last job.
John, talking there about some of the things that we've been hearing about, you know, contractors not being paid, and this is part of what's been happening at Cube Burke as well with people who have been working on this hotel saying, we aren't getting paid for the work that we're doing. But, you know, John with a direct experience there, Hillary.
Yeah, exactly. And that, I think, demonstrates the ripple effect of a problem like this. And you know, as another caller mentioned, sure, there's the case for the investors, and that's what the SEC, which is leading this current investigation, that's really what the SEC, that's who's, you know, that's their ballywick. That's their job, is to look out for the investors. I anticipate, you know, if this continues to unfold at the same rate, there will be a lot more cause for action from people who didn't get paid. And even if there's not legal action, the impact is still there. It's really sad.
Again, we're talking about this situation as some things are just coming out. This press release note from the SEC, I want to read another quote from the SEC statement here. According to the SEC's complaint, Ariel Quiros improperly tapped investor funds for such things as the purchase of a luxury condominium, payment of his income taxes, and other taxes unrelated to the investments and acquisition of an unrelated ski resort. The alleged fraud ran the gamut from false statements to deceptive financial transactions to outright theft, said Andrew Koresny, director of the SEC's Division of Enforcement. So pretty damning words here from the SEC. There will be a press conference. We're live here in the noon hour. There is going to be a press conference at 12:45 that will include Governor Peter Shumlin, the Department of Financial Regulation Commissioner Susan Donegan, Attorney General Bill Sorrell, and the Agency of Commerce and Community Development Secretary Patricia Moulton. So we're still waiting to see what happens, what comes out of that, and what the state is saying about both these allegations from the SEC and its own role in this situation. Let's go to Bruce, who's calling in from Essex. Hi, Bruce. Go ahead.
Hi, Jane and Hillary. Thank you. Hillary, I'm sure you don't remember every article you've written for Digger on this, but you really put your finger on what I call the fuzzy math regarding job creation, which is the big bumper sticker of why we should do this. But about 2 years ago, you wrote an article about Senator Leahy really diluting the full-time employment requirement, not as someone working at least 35 hours per week, but by the equivalent of a full-time job, regardless of how many employees fill the position. So it seems to me the more we learn about the job totem, the more it becomes more diluted and much less benefit to the people of the Northeast Kingdom. I'd be interested in your comments, and thank you both.
Thanks for your close reading and great memory, Bruce. I'm impressed. I remember that article. I don't remember the details, but I do remember poring over some regulations and deciphering all that went into that. And I think that's You know, it's interesting to bring up because I think that that is a big part of, frankly, a little bit of the hero facade that is behind the EB-5 funded projects. Because, you know, the job creation basically, you know, the job creation and the devil are in the details. And the press conferences really don't go to that level. And so I think that it's easy when promoting a project and when trying to get a local community on board for a big development. I mean, these were really stark, game-changing, community-changing developments in these places. When trying to get them on, get local communities on board, obviously, you know, you want to focus on the positives and not necessarily parse some of those details.
We have been hearing as well this week, Senator Leahy speaking in Washington about reforming the EB-5 program, which, as you said, Hillary, he's been a supporter of in the past. He says now it would need to be revamped, have some changes made before he'd recommend that Congress should extend the program. So he's been speaking. Of course, you know, this is all unfolding while this situation in Vermont is ongoing and in this investigation is starting. Senator Leahy, well aware of the situation in Vermont, actually citing it as he talked about the need for change. But, you know, sort of interesting timing here.
It is very interesting timing. And he has been pushing for certain reforms for quite some time. As Bruce said, you know, some of it arguably diluting the job creation requirements, but also he has been advocating for the regional center program, which is what Vermont operates under, to become permanent. Right now, it's still just sort of a pilot that just keeps getting extended by a year or a number of months. And Leahy, Senator Leahy, certainly has been a big advocate of the EB-5 program in general and wanting to shore it up.
One more call here from Craig in Bristol on this topic. Hi, Craig. Go right ahead.
Hi, Jane. Excuse me. Yeah, just a reminder that Sanger hired away the state EB-5 coordinator back early last year because there was a job ads in the 7 days in June of 2015 for the two EB-5 positions. And when that person was hired away from the state, there was sort of a mini ethics controversy because there are no state rules on, you know, folks immediately going from oversight position to the, you know, private company that they were overseeing, so to speak.
Craig, thanks for your comment. Hillary's doing some Googling right now to make sure that she's up to speed on all of that. And Hillary, this was something that you remembered as well.
Right. And you might be referring to Brent Raymond, who was the coordinator of the Vermont EB-5 Regional Center. He actually took a job with Peak Resorts, which is easily confused with J-Peak Resorts, but is a different Vermont ski resort company. So he did... It's the same idea. He went from the cheerleader / overseer to working directly for one of these companies.
But it wasn't
but
Bill
was
Stenger and Ariel
Quiros. Stenger and Ariel Quiros' shop.
Right? Well, more to come on this just in a couple of minutes now. A press conference from the state to talk about this situation unfolding, the SEC allegations of fraudulent investing issues with the developers of Q Burke Mountain, J-Peak, Ariel Quiros, and Bill Stenger. Hillary Niles trying to go to that press conference, and we will be talking about it very soon again. Hillary, thank you for sticking with us. I'm going to let you run up to that press conference now. Hillary Niles is an independent investigative reporter and a digital journalism consultant. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jane.
Coming up, we're going to get an update on what's happening with testing of PFOA levels in water, in maple syrup, and in blood in residents in North Bennington and beyond. You're listening to Vermont Edition. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. And now we're going to look at the latest on chemical contamination in Bennington County water. The PFOA situation in North Bennington and Pownall is ongoing, with more wells being monitored, other sources of potential contamination being tested, and the announcement that blood tests of affected residents will be starting soon. Joining us with an update is VPR's Howard Weiss-Tisman. Howard, nice to talk with you again.
Yeah, hi, Jane.
So the latest update released by the state yesterday was a small nugget of seemingly good news. Tests of local maple syrup in the affected area in North Bennington came back negative for high levels of PFOA. As I said, that's pretty small-scale good news compared to what we've been hearing. But does it have any other potential implications for the likelihood of contamination in soil, things like vegetables grown in the area, or any other ripple effects that you know of, Howard?
Well, I don't know about ripple effects. I mean, as you say, it was some good news. I'm actually in Bennington right now. I'm sitting in my car right off of Main Street, and I was just meeting with one of the maple syrup producers, so he was pretty excited about the test that came back yesterday. And as you say, also, the latest round of water tests from Poundle came back, and they were mostly all clean. Now, those were the private wells that were taken near the public water supply that is contaminated in Poundle. There's a public water supply that serves about 45 households. That came back with slightly elevated levels a couple of weeks ago. The state tested private wells near that public water source, and those private wells came back clean. So there was some good news yesterday all around. We're still waiting for results from the soil test. As far as I know, there are no soil test results back yet, so we don't really know the extent of contamination in the soil in Bennington or Poundle.
And is there anything else in Poundle that we're still waiting to find out as well?
Yeah, they did a bunch of test water surveys, if you will. They kind of are targeting a few areas near the Poundle landfill. Now, there was a Warren Wire company down in Poundle, and that's the suspected source of the contamination down there. There are some people thinking that they may have either legally or illegally dumped some of this Teflon-coated wire. And so they're testing a couple of spots around Poundle. They haven't done any more widespread testing down there yet. They've kind of clued in a couple of areas spotted around town. And when those results come back, that's going to tell state officials kind of the extent of how much more testing may be done down there. And those results should be back this week or early next week, I'd imagine.
Howard, we've been talking a lot about Poundle and about North Bennington, but the state is also going to start testing water, I understand, in Essex, South Hero, Colchester, Shelburne, South Burlington, Winooski, and Williston.
Yeah, that news also came out last week. There's been a lot of news about this situation. Every week the state's been sending out 3, 4, 5 press releases. And when the news broke in Bennington, the state kind of started doing its own investigation, looking at other industries that may have used Teflon-coated products. And what they came up with is that there are wire companies that use Teflon-coated wire, and there also has some suspect of the semiconductor industries. And, of course, this was also used in firefighting foam. So they're testing near the National Guard and also the Firefighter Academy in Pittsburgh. So state officials have said that they don't have any suspicion that there's contamination up there. They're just doing this just to be sure. I don't think people expect there to be further contamination up there. Also, because as we're learning in Bennington, a lot of the contamination seems to be around this ChemFab factory in North Bennington. And what ChemFab was doing, it was baking this Teflon onto the fabric. And so a lot of emissions were going up into the smokestack. People think that's why it's so widely spread in North Bennington. Even if there was some kind of contamination around the state in some of the towns you mentioned, I don't think there's a suspicion that it's going to be as widespread because it would be more of a dumping issue, which would be a little more localized. But we'll find out about those tests again in the next week or so.
I'm talking with Howard Weiss-Tissman, who's been reporting for VPR on the situation with the suspected carcinogenic chemical PFOA in the water supply in North Bennington and Poundle, and the state's updated plans to test other communities for PFOA levels. Howard, the state has announced more detailed plans now for testing PFOA levels in the blood of residents in North Bennington who live where high levels have been detected or who have lived in those places in the last 8 years. The tests are also being offered to former workers of the ChemFab plant that you were just talking about, which is the suspected source of the contamination. Why did it take so long to get the blood testing started?
Well, yeah, that's right. We just found out, I think it was just this week, that the blood tests are going to start at the end of April. And the main reason why it took so long is that this PFOA, there's not a lot known about it. There are not a lot of labs that test for it. And so the state had to track down a blood lab in the United States. I don't know quite. I haven't heard which lab they've chosen. But they had to find a lab who could do the testing. They had to find a lab who could handle a high volume of testing. And they also had to track down the testing kits. It was kind of akin to the water issue, is that this is a very, very specialized test. They're looking at parts per trillion. So just like the water test, these blood tests are going to have to be sent out of state. And it just took the Department of Health a little time to pull all the pieces together. It's complicated. It's not like a regular blood test.
I should also say there is a registration window for people who want their blood tested. They have to let the state of Vermont know by April 30th. So we'll try to post a link for people who want more information about how to do that. Howard, it sounds like there is, in addition to all of this stuff happening right now with testing and, you know, making sure that people's water supply gets cleared up and checking their blood, there's also some pressure on the Federal Environmental Protection Agency to update its health advisory on PFOA and to actually lower what is it says is a suggested safety limit. What's the likelihood of the EPA taking action on that?
Oh, the EPA is definitely going to go ahead with that. They've been studying this for almost a year, and the EPA, I spoke to a spokesperson this month. They expect to make that announcement in the next month or so. They are definitely going to be putting out a new level. The EPA, what they call it, is a health advisory level. And why some people are concerned about that is the health advisory level kind of says, what is water safe to drink, quote-unquote safe to drink, over a period. So the EPA is saying if there are 400 parts per trillion or less, that it is safe to consume over a long period. But the EPA is not going to regulate this kind of on the same extent that they do lead or arsenic or something like that, where they say, you know, you shouldn't be doing any of that. So even if the EPA comes out with this new lowered level at 100, the EPA is saying that if you've got 100 parts per trillion, that the water is safe. Vermont obviously thinks that level should be 20. So the EPA is going to move ahead with that, but a lot of people are waiting to see exactly where they set that level. So that's going to be interesting to watch. But that should happen in the next month or so, I think.
And Howard, just a few seconds left here, but regardless of what the EPA does, state lawmakers are talking about their ability to, at the state level, to take action on chemicals that they see as potentially dangerous.
Yeah, that's a longer conversation. That goes back to the Toxic Substance Act, which is taking place in Congress. There's been a House and Senate bill approved, and they're trying to figure that one out, but that's not going to be a short term. That's going to be still a little while before that happens.
Howard Weiss-Tisman is VPR's Southern Vermont correspondent. Thank you very much for updating us on the PFOA situation, Howard.
You're welcome, Jane.
And now to recap what we know right this moment about federal and state investigations of resort projects in the Northeast Kingdom. The Jay Peak and Kew Burke ski resorts were raided yesterday by federal and state authorities. The investigation is being led by the Securities and Exchange Commission out of the commission's Miami office. The SEC alleges that Ariel Quiros and Bill Stenger made false statements and misled foreign investors as they raised hundreds of millions of dollars for resort projects and for a biomedical research facility in the Northeast Kingdom. Essentially, the feds are saying that Stenger and Quiros told investors that they were investing in several projects at Jay Peak. Instead, the commission says the money was, quote, misappropriated in a, quote, Ponzi-like fashion to fund deficits in earlier projects. More than $200 million was allegedly used for these other purposes, including $50 million spent on Quiros' personal expenses and in other ways never disclosed to investors. The SEC said in a news release that Kyros improperly tapped investor funds to buy a luxury condominium, pay his income taxes, and to purchase an unrelated ski resort. Stenger and Kyros used the federal EB-5 immigrant investor program to attract foreign investors to the project. This project allows foreigners and their families to gain residency status in the U.S. if they invest at least $500,000 in a project that creates or preserves 10 jobs in the U.S. And just minutes ago, the governor's office announced that the state is filing a suit that alleges investor fraud at J-Peak, Inc. over EB-5 projects. The state's lawsuit filed in Washington Superior Court is the result of over a year-long investigation by the Department of Financial Regulation into the finances of the projects, says the governor's office. A press conference is underway right now as we broadcast live in the noon hour in Montpelier detailing these allegations. Stay with VPR.net for updates all afternoon and listen for full coverage during All Things Considered. And stay with us tomorrow on the program when we'll be looking ahead to the New York State presidential primary, which is next week, where the results could matter more than they have for years. Got a question or a thought about how our neighbors might vote? Or if you're in New York, how are you seeing the process? Email vermontedition@vpr.net and be sure to listen tomorrow at noon. Vermont Edition is produced by Rick Singeri and Sam Gale Rosen, with production assistance from Anna St. Marie and a whole host of other people today. Liam Connors directed the show, and our executive producer is Patty Daniels. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.